Welcome to the Soap video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. Last time we started our survey through the book of the Revelation, not Revelations, the Revelation, and we made it through an introduction in the first couple of chapters.
We did.
So,
yeah, so we knew, yeah. And so we know that this was written by the Apostle John, and it was dictated by Jesus to John, and John also wrote down what he saw, and he used that a lot. And we ended last week, Jesus told John to write a letter to seven churches, and he told them for each church exactly what to write down, and John dutifully did that. And we made our way through four of them last week, and we're going to start with the other three this week, and then we'll get on to others.
So we're going to do three chapters, and it's sort of going to span. We talked about the outline of the book. So chapter one is point one. Chapters two and three are is point two. And then basically the rest of the book, chapters 4 through 22, start the third major section.
Yeah, that, and it was tell them the way it is.
What you saw.
Yeah, what you saw. What so past, now, today, past, present, and future.
And future, basically.
An easy way to say it. Yeah.
So chapters 4 and 5 that we're covering this week are starting to look into the future, the after the church age, right?
Yeah, but we got to finish with three.
Three churches left.
Yeah, we got to finish with three, which is the present, or his present time to us 2,000 years ago.
And our present time, too, because it still talks
still
about
the
church age.
Yeah, very good point. So the fifth church that we're going to talk about is a church by the name of Sardis. And as we talked about last week, these follow a common format. You know, there's a description that Jesus pulls in from chapter one to help describe the churches. There's things they're doing well. There's things they're doing poorly. There's a commandment.
Yeah.
Or not a commandment like that, but there's a command that Jesus wants them to do.
To fix whatever
to fix
the problem
is, right? And then there's usually, or then there's a reward for the people who overcome.
Yeah, and we said that the overcomers are really all believers, right? But Jesus is still presenting himself as the judge, which is interesting because we usually think of him as the judge of the world, the judge of unbelievers, but here he's really serving as the judge of the churches too. So we will stand before, we're told, the judgment seat of Christ, and he will judge us for our lives.
Right. We also talked last week that these were seven churches that were real, especially in the days of the church.
This, yeah.
And we're about 90 or about AD 90, 95 when this was written. So these would be churches that were alive then, people that were alive, probably on a major Roman route. And they were in Turkey going south.
Southeast.
East. All right, so Sardis is in there. Now, Sardis was commended, and they were commended for pursuing godly living, which is great. But the majority of the church was dead.
Yeah.
And I don't think they mean physically dead, but I mean spiritually dead.
Yeah, so it's possible that, like we see today, it's a church congregation can actually have unbelievers in it. They say all the right things, they do all the right stuff, but they've never actually been saved.
Right.
And it could be that Sardis was...
Right, and there's not a belief, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, we have churches... Like you said today about it.
Yep.
So there's a command. Wake up. Repent.
Yeah.
Strengthen what little you have left.
Yep.
Yeah. So not a good church to be.
Yeah.
Or not a good place to be.
Yep.
But you got a wake-up call too. So it is, they should be joyous that they got this wake-up call. And then it's a question, what did they do?
What are they going to do with it? Yeah. Yeah. And today we would say, you know, if we were consulting with a church that looked like this, and we knew that, we would say, get back to the gospel. You've got to preach the gospel. Your people need to hear the gospel. And if they have just, you know, gotten lazy and fallen asleep, they need to get back to it. Or if they're not saved at all, they need to hear the gospel and be saved.
Right. Right. Yeah. Start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Work your way up. Philadelphia is the next church.
And this is the one in Turkey, not in Pennsylvania. Why are we jumping to the United States?
Well, it is a good question. This seems to be a very small church, but they were praised because even though they were small, they were still making an impact.
Yeah.
And that is cool.
This is the second of only two of the seven churches that Jesus had nothing bad to say about this church, yeah. right? Only good things, yeah, only commendation, yeah. no condemnation. Yeah.
So Jesus also said they would be kept from the hour of testing. Yep. So what did they mean by that?
So most teachers are going to say, most conservative teachers are going to say, that's referring to the coming tribulation, the 7 years of tribulation. There are some good arguments for that. There's some good arguments against that.
So that again, so what you're saying is that they would be raptured beforehand and not to be part of it.
Yeah. A lot of conservative teachers will use that as a proof of what's called a pre-tribulational rapture, that Jesus is going to rapture the church, take the church before the tribulation starts. And honestly, most of the book of the Revelation describes that 7 year tribulation period, right? Mm-hmm. Again, good arguments for, good arguments against. I'm not convinced that that's exactly what it's about, because he says it's, you know, well, one of the arguments for is it's the hour of testing that's going to come on the whole world. Well, that's what the tribulation is going to do, right? It's the whole world. Yeah. The problem is because you have kept my admonition to endure, I'm going to do that. So that makes you think, well, if maybe it's only those who endure are going to be raptured. But they weren't even raptured. This was 1900 right. years ago. So right. how does that fit with, there's been no rapture yet. The tribulation hasn't started yet. So it's a good okay. mind wrestle thing. And, you know, I know what is typically taught. And, you know, I'm still...
Still working
I'm
on
still
it?
Working through it. Yeah, okay. I'm still working through it personally, you know.
Okay.
I mean, technically, they did survive the tribulation. They will be part of the rapture and the resurrection, so it could still right. be part of that. It just didn't happen in their day. So that's one way to get around, to yeah. understand or get around some of those problems.
Okay. Our seventh church is from Laodicea, and it's the only church that... Jesus had nothing good to say about
nothing
them.
Nothing good to say, right? Yeah. So he's had two churches with nothing bad to say, but now he can't even find one good thing about this church?
Yeah, he uses some descriptive language, we'll say, in there too. But the problem is, they're lukewarm.
Yeah.
If you're hot, great. If you're cold, okay.
Yeah.
But you're right in the middle, yep. and it's driving them crazy. And it kind of goes back to something you said before. They seem to be very rich
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
So, and they leaned on their wealth instead of Jesus. And we've seen a lot that that can cause problems.
This is one of those passages that has a pretty well-known verse. And I think people misinterpret it, but it's still well known. Maybe you've seen the picture of Jesus, you know, knocking on a door, because the verse says, "I stand at the door and knock, you know, if anyone lets me in." But think about this. This is a church that claims to be believers in Jesus. They claim to be doing, you know, mm-hmm. Christians or whatever. And Jesus is saying, "I'm on the outside. You've got the door locked. I'm on the outside. I can't even get into the church that has my name on it."
Yeah.
He's like, please, could you let me in? You're doing all this great, you know, this stuff, whatever the stuff is. You've completely locked me out. I'm just looking for somebody to let me in.
Yeah.
Right? How big of an indictment does that have to be against a church?
Right. So that gets us to the end of the second part of John's outline, the what is, or the present.
The present,
tense.
Yeah.
So then we move into chapter 4, and we see it starting with after these things, which is a...
that's the key word for the third part.
Yeah. Yeah, so now we're in the third section, you know, what will be. Before we get into this, this is the last time that the church will be mentioned until we get to chapter 19.
Yeah.
And we're on, chapter 4?
Yeah.
That's a long span in there. So one belief is the rapture must have happened.
Yeah.
Right? So even though you didn't see it, in between chapter 3 and chapter 4, the rapture must have happened because he doesn't mention the church till we get way to the end.
Right. I don't think that's the strongest argument. I think a stronger argument, I think it's true, but I don't think it's, I think a stronger argument is that what he is about to describe has already been told in the Old Testament as far as the book of Daniel chapter 9, there is a period of 7 years coming for the purification of Israel, for the punishment of Gentile nations. And the church has nothing to do with that. There's no reason for the church to be here. And so it's called, that period is called the day of the Lord, the day of the Lord's wrath, you know, that sort of thing. Well, 1 Thessalonians tells us that Jesus is rescuing us from wrath. We're not destined for that wrath. So we don't have any reason to be here. So the fact that we're not mentioned, even though we've got an entire New Testament talking about the church, two chapters here talking about the church, and then all of a sudden it's silent about the church, I think that's a stronger argument, because this is going back to stuff that's already been talked about with a very specific purpose for Israel and for Gentile nations. We don't have any reason to be here.
All right.
Now, some people, so that go pick, you know, that it sort of pigtails right. off of it, right? Some people look at verse 1 here in chapter 4, and I heard a voice like a trumpet saying, come up here. Oh, the rapture, there's going to be a voice, there's a shout, there's a trumpet, and we're going up. So obviously that's what it's talking about.
Right.
Again, he's talking to John. John goes into heaven in this vision to see things. It's John going up there. But I sort of like the parallel with the rapture
Right. So what I like about chapter 4 is we get a view of heaven.
Yeah.
And what's in there. And that's why I love the Revelation, because of the kind of detail we get. Now, do I want more detail? Of course. Do we know the color scheme? No.
You get some colors, but not a lot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but you get to ask questions, right? Yeah. And you get to ask yourself questions. So John's, you know, are there doors in heaven?
Yeah.
It gets answered in chapter 4.
Apparently there's a door,
right? There are open doors. So it turns out that there's open doors in heaven,
which
is hilarious, because you can just see the Father say, close the door, we're letting all the hot air out. So John was in spirit, and he saw God sitting on his throne.
Yeah.
So would this have been... If God is sitting on his throne, that means he would be in the throne room.
In the throne room.
Just like Isaiah chapter 6.
Yep.
In the throne room.
And Ezekiel chapter 1 actually describes the exact same thing. There's a throne. There's this great crystal pavement in front of the throne. Here's the color. There's the angels. There's the whole thing. So again, there's not a quote from Ezekiel chapter 1. But Ezekiel 1 and Revelation 4 line up perfectly. Yeah.
All right. So John sees God sitting on a throne. I think everybody's good with that. But then there are 24 other thrones and 24 elders sitting on those thrones with crowns.
Yeah.
So has to represent some kind of kingdom leadership with the crowns.
Yeah.
Then from the throne came flashes of lightning and thunder, which is kind of cool because it came from God's throne, which I don't even know how that happens, but
it's kind
of a cool thing.
If you think of thunder and lightning, you think of Mount Sinai, you think of judgment. God is about ready to judge this world. And so you still have the judgment theme coming through here. The 24 elders, we don't know much about them at all.
Right.
But if we look back into the Old Testament, we know that God has a council, I think it's angelic, a council of beings that he uses to administrate this world. We see that several times in the Old Testament. So again, I think we've got a connection back to the Old Testament that these people already knew. John didn't have to describe more than just, this is what I'm seeing, and it already fits within the context. It's interesting in Daniel chapter 7, that when Daniel saw the throne room and saw the Son of Man, which is the Messiah, every time you see the word or phrase Son of Man, it's a messianic title. He saw the throne and other thrones. So there's a link back to Daniel 7 as well.
Yep. It also talks in here about seven spirits of God.
Yep.
So what's going on here?
So, again, you've got a link back to Isaiah chapter 11. You've got a link back to Zechariah chapter, I don't remember. But most people most conservative scholars are thinking that it's a reference to the Holy Spirit himself. As seven is the number of perfection, we talk about the seven eyes of God in chapter one, and it's referenced God's Spirit and God's work in the world.
Okay. Speaking of creatures, right? We also see some creatures that are full of eyes.
Yep.
And there's, you know, some look like a lion. There's an ox, a man, an eagle.
Yep.
And each have six wings.
Yep.
So the first thing I thought of was angel. Right. Yeah. And was it seraphims?
So the seraphim in Isaiah 6 have six wings, right? But these also are very similar to the description of the cherubim in Ezekiel chapter 1, full of eyes, and they look like these creatures. So, yes, I'm definitely some kind of angels. Yeah, yeah, some kind of angel there.
Yeah. So if our purpose is to give glory to God, then I think in chapter 4, verses 9 through 11, make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
From the standpoint of the elders are throwing themselves down and giving glory to God.
Yep.
I don't know how often that happens, but in order for them to be useful, probably not every day.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah. Probably not every hour.
At times it says day and night and you know, all of these things. So it's really hard to make a connection with that. Here's a fun fact. Let me throw a fun fact out. Have you ever heard somebody say that when we get to heaven, we're going to receive rewards and then we're going to throw our crowns at Jesus' feet?
Yeah, the throwing of the crowns.
The throwing of the crowns. There's a band called Casting Crowns that's built off of the same concept. This is where it comes
from.
Yeah,
the verse that it's coming from.
Yeah. Right. Now, it's the 24 elders that are throwing their crowns at Jesus' feet. So there's an assumption that somehow they represent the church or Christians or something. I don't think they do, but it's fun because that concept of throwing our crowns at Jesus' feet has sort of infiltrated Christian language. Well, here's where it comes from.
I always took this to be a number of different ways, but my current thinking is they're representative of land or people, groups of people, which may or may not be in specific lands, because God say, you know, I need you guys. We need more wood. We need this. You guys need to do something better.
Yeah.
And then those elders would be responsible for carrying that task forward. Which really means going to your people and there's be some kind of leadership.
Which fits the administrative theme, because we know that angels and good angels and bad angels influence human government. Definitely fallen angels influence human government, demons, right? We know that throughout the Old Testament. But in Daniel 12, we're told that Michael is actually the angel who protects the nation of Israel.
Right.
And we see that angels, even holy angels, do help with the administration of the world. So again, I think this comes back to some kind of angelic administration.
Right. Yeah, no, it definitely seems that way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk about the 24. You have the 12 disciples. You have...
Yeah, 12 tribes of Israel,
exactly.
Whatever. It's like, I don't find that in the Old Testament.
Well,
and that's the context that we have, right? So I try to stick with what we already know.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
Okay, then now we get to chapter 5. And God has a scroll.
Yep.
And this scroll has seven seals on it.
Yep.
And in Treehouse Kids and ever, there was always, you know, where are the seals located? Doesn't really matter.
Right.
Right. But the idea is nobody, and it's a powerful angel.
Yeah.
And he can't open the scroll.
Who is worthy?
And he is looking for somebody who can open the scroll.
Yeah.
And it hits John so hard that he starts weeping because there's no one to be found that can open the scroll. He has no idea what's even on the scroll.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It's just, it gets to him. And then he sees, in my mind, the crucifixion from heaven's point of view.
Yeah. So it's interesting because one of these elders says, stop weeping, because the Lion of the tribe of Judah, which is big, that goes back to Genesis 49, the Root of David, that's a link to Isaiah 11, has conquered, and so he can open the scroll and its seven seals. And so John turns, and he's expecting to see what?
Jesus as a Messiah. Yeah,
the Lion of the tribe of Judah.
Right.
But he turns and what does he see? Not a lion.
A lamb that has been sacrificed.
A lamb that has been sacrificed.
Right.
So now we have this lion-lamb theme. Jesus is the lion, the Messiah, the king. But he is the sacrifice, the slaughtered one. And that's what makes him worthy.
Right.
And in fact, their tune changes. Not only are you worthy because you created everything in chapter 4, you now are worthy because you redeemed people with your blood.
Like, wow. And the rest of the chapter is all about how Jesus is worthy.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a great...
Now, we're going to see something here in chapter 5 that is going to actually sort of reoccur, throughout the book of the Revelation. And that is that John is going to see something, and the next thing he sees is not necessarily going to be chronologically the next thing. It could be a repeat. It could be a redescription. It could be a fast forward, right? It could be. So the rest of the book broadly is chronological. We're seeing chunks of things that are happening one after another. But as John sees them, he'll sort of be seeing them sometimes like this, or this, and then this, and then this, and then this.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
So in chapter 5, there is a, I think, and I'll say this is an I think there is a jump between verse 10 and verse 11. Because in the first 10 verses, the focus is on the scroll. The scroll hasn't been opened yet. We're going to see that happen in chapter 6, right? But in verse 11, we now have many angels, as well as the living creatures and the elders. Their numbers 10,000, 10,000, and all that. But then in verse 13, I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea and all that is in them singing. But that's not happening before all the judgment in chapters 6 through 19. That seems to be something where
future.
John is given a glimpse of the end of the book before you get to the end of the book. That's going to happen. We'll see it again in chapter 7.
Okay.
He sees this, and then he sees this down here. And so we have to be ready for that. And I just want to prep you for that as part of your reading. Don't think this is just a perfectly linear timeline. There's definitely some jumping around that's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay, great.
So just be on guard.
Yeah, so great setup for next week too.
Yeah.
Especially with the opening of the scroll.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll open the... Well, we won't, but Jesus will open a scroll next week in chapter 6. But for now, pay attention to your reading. And see what's going on. As always, as questions come up, comments come up, please send them our way. We'd love to answer those or hear your thoughts on those. And share this with your friends and family. Subscribe and like and do all the things. And we'll see you back here next time.
Bye, everybody.